Hey Jordan, how you doing?
Hi Ben, how are you?
Yeah, good. You can hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you okay, mate. I can hear you.
Fantastic.
Yeah, how's things?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. I'm really sorry about earlier. What it's like sometimes things sort of run away with you.
I know exactly what it's like, mate, so don't apologise at all. So thanks for sort of rearranging this and getting it sorted.
Yeah, my pleasure. No, it's a real sort of privilege. I love sort of chatting to other sort of agency owners and things like that. It's it's nice, we're all in the same sector. So meet others and network. I think that's what's so powerful about this day and age, up and where are you based?
We're based in Staffordshire actually. We're based in a place called Penkridge. Sort of about 30 minutes from Birmingham. How about yourself?
Yeah, down in the southwest. Nice. We're just sort of beach bums, surfers.
Of course. Nice. Yeah, we've got a few of our team members are down your neck of the woods. So
brilliant.
Yeah. So nice, cool. But yeah, so thanks for getting this sorted.
No worries at all. Well, let's just dive into it.
Okay.
And let's sort of hear all about it. I'm on this really annoying chair that keeps on sinking, so I'm going to be going like up and down all the time. Just really
slowly, just disappearing.
Stitch me up with this chair.
Love it.
But let me just do a quick intro.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Hey guys, it's Ben Parry, Startup Chats. I'm really privileged to have Jordan Pinkham from White Label Studio with me today. And we're just going to sort of chat about his business, his journey, and how he got to where he is, and share with you those sort of really helpful insights. So Jordan, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Really, really great to have you with us, really. So just let's kick off. Tell us a bit about yourself and White Studio Label.
Okay, yeah, perfect. So essentially, starting with myself, I actually started in the print industry. So sort of came out of university 2011, I think. And basically part-time while I was at uni, I was working in a warehouse for a print company, which was sort of local to myself, part-time job. And it was one of the cases that I wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do. I've always had a bit of entrepreneurial drive about myself anyway, and that was always the long-term goal. And it was a case of, I came out of uni and almost like, it was a degree in business management. And it was almost like, right, where do we start? What do we do? And luckily at the time, the print company I was working for asked me to sort of go on full-time and work in the office, essentially saw that I had a lot more skills than working in their warehouse, a lot more to myself. And it went from there, really. So I was there 2.5 years, I think, from the age of 20 to 22. And then, coming out of that, I actually decided to set my own print company up after just 2 years' experience in the industry. Again, that sort of entrepreneurial drive kicking in there. Just decided to go for it. I was almost in a bit of limbo. I knew I wanted to do a lot more than what I was currently doing. There wasn't a lot of scope for myself to grow, and just decided to go for it. So set that up. I was 22 at the time, just about to turn 23, so fairly young.
Fantastic. Really, really young to set up your own business. I think that's fantastic. And I think it's the best time to start a business, actually, is when you're that young, because almost the younger the better, because you've got no responsibilities, you've got minimal outgoings, hopefully. Nothing to lose.
That was it. And it was almost a case I was living at home. I'd already sort of purchased my car. I was fortunate enough that my sort of parents didn't require rent from me, which is obviously quite good, because a lot of people sort of have that at a young age. So I was very fortunate that was the case. But it was literally a case of there was no outgoings. If I wait a few years, I might have my own house. You've got a mortgage, and that's when it does get difficult. So it was a case of, right, go for it. And I was fortunate enough that at the time, so my parents actually owned a company, debt management company. And at the time that industry was being regulated, and sort of obviously spoke to my sort of father about doing this. And he decided to come on board as well. So it was with no experience in print, straight into it, dragged him along with me. And yeah, just sort of went for it from there. So that was actually a print management company. So there's no machinery. There was no overheads at all for the business. It was genuinely just sort of acquiring new clients, marking up projects, and taking it from there, just from scratch almost. I obviously had the background in print anyway and had the knowledge of it, but it was actually never on the sales side. So that was completely new to me at the time. And yeah, just sort of, it went from there really, to sort of skip quite a few years with that. That ran for, or is still actually running today. But I was actually involved for perhaps 3 years, which sort of then leads up to where I am today really with White Label.
And just touching on the printing again, was that essentially creating a magazine and selling advertising space, or was there something different? Was it slightly different?
It was actually sort of product based. So it was products such as producing brochures for people. So we actually had a sort of range of suppliers. So it was brochures, banners,
marketing material,
large format. So it's like a print broker almost. That's what the company is.
Yeah.
It was actual physical products.
Physically and, printing the
exactly.
Whoever.
Exactly.
Joe the plumber with his leaflets or whatever.
That's exactly right. And I mean, that model sort of, it's actually based at, it's an extremely good business model if you have essentially a small number of large clients. So, and we did, we managed to find a lot of large clients that were spending quite a lot of money with us, and mainly because with that, it's quite a difficult process. If you're spending 20,000-30,000 a month on print, the marketing manager, business owner, marketing team have to sort of physically manage that, and things do go wrong in print, and they just want sort of one point of contact that's going to manage it for them. And that was quite good, to be honest. It was obviously comes with its own sort of downsides to it, and still learning what to do and what not to do, sort of. So it was quite a good point for me, I think, and it's helped me get to where I am through going through a lot of that anyway, sort of learning what works and what doesn't, and sort of understanding the difficulties in scalability, how much time you're putting into things versus how much you're getting back, and sort of almost setting up a long-term thing. And for me, that was sort of the main reason for my exit out of that, really. It's sort of when this grew. Essentially, it was based around the fact that I've always actually been a designer on the side of what I've been doing. So like sort of freelancing projects, things like that. And what happened was that people were asking the print company for design work. And we started taking it on. I started doing it myself, sort of spare time after work. And what happened was that a lot of people started doing that, and it ended up becoming, my time was completely swallowed up by creating brochures, branding projects, website projects for people. And essentially it turned from a print company to myself, my own time being swallowed up. So what actually happened is that we hired somebody internally. It didn't work out. It was the wrong sort of decision, because we took somebody on straight out of uni, and she was really, really good at what she did, but probably we weren't geared up to manage someone and manage how they were going to sort of grow it, and tackle. There was a lot of projects. I did work very long hours producing these, and it almost got to a point where no time was freed up, which was essentially the goal. And that didn't work out. We then tried a couple of freelancers, essentially to try and fix the solution. And again, what was happening was that we were finding people to produce it for us who were really good. It took us a bit of time to get someone who was really good. And you find somebody who's really good and they're not available all the time, because essentially they're amazing at what they do, so they get booked up, and that's fair enough. That's their job, and it sort of ran that way. So there wasn't a solution for me, really. And I could have potentially found one, sort of like almost took a step back from it all, but not for the way I needed it. It's very, I'm sure you find yourself with agencies, sometimes it's very sporadic, and design, some people need a lot in 1 month and not a lot the next month. And there was never really a steady flow. And what I found was that there was no solution for me. I could have used agencies, but with our margins on the projects, they just would have disappeared. And we didn't have that sort of name behind us to be able to charge that amount of money for the projects. And also the clients weren't really prepared to pay sort of agency cost. It wasn't really that sort of client base. And that's essentially where the idea came for White Label. And that's where it was born from. And it's essentially the sort of finding a solution for people that need continuous support, but they might not be in the position to hire. We also work with a lot of agencies that I was extremely surprised that they didn't have internal designers, just depending on what areas they operated in. Mm-hmm. And from chatting to quite a lot of people, everyone was in the same boat that I was speaking to, was that they were either using freelancers, a lot were using sites like Fiverr, People Per Hour, to find people to produce stuff. And there was never that, they never really got the benefits of having someone internally, because, like, as you know yourself, having an internal designer is absolutely amazing, but not a lot of people have that amount of work and also the funds to be able to have someone internally full time. And there's not really the need if there's not that, like, 8 hours a day of work on for everyone. So we just sort of created this. It's almost like we like to look at it as a middle ground, really, between hiring internally and using freelancers or agencies, and we just try and create sort of a real solution for people. It started from there. That's how it came about. Obviously, there's a lot more things that come into play to get it going and to get it off the ground. But that's essentially where the initial idea came from, and then obviously. To get it off the ground is a different story, really.
No, definitely. I think it's interesting, isn't it? I think a lot of businesses, whether you call it a startup or whatever, I mean, ultimately, you know, it's all business. Often, you know, the new ideas come from people's own pains and pressure points and frustrations.
Precisely.
So really interesting to see, you know, you obviously experienced something and the full-time employee wasn't quite working. It wasn't, agencies weren't quite working. Proper freelancer weren't always available, so there was always a pain point somewhere.
So
that obviously you're looking to sort of tackle that.
Exactly.
When you, I guess this sort of brings into a little bit sort of maybe sort of pre-launching and thinking about the business. And don't worry if you know, I say this to everybody. You know, if you know most people don't have any sort of pre-launch strategies or thoughts. It tends to be an evolution. But I think, you know, I want to try and sort of think about it for, you know, the viewers as well.
Of course. Yeah.
Because,
of course.
I think it's an interesting one. I mean, just to share with you, you know, for me, pre-launch could be anything from just really focusing on the branding and knowing who your audience is. Although you might not have gone through, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but you know, you may have not gone through a proper sort of process. Maybe you came from more of a, I've got a pain, or this is an opportunity, which is again, really, really common. And a good approach. Did you get some sort of validation from other people to start thinking, is this just me, or is there a bigger, wider community of people finding this problem that I'm facing?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, we were quite structured with it. So essentially, I think it was from speaking to people, and I was sort of chatting to people and just explaining my idea, because obviously sort of how, just slightly touching back, but how sort of Pinkprint grew was a lot of networking, a lot of business relationships. I had quite good relationships with a lot of my clients, and so much that we'd be on the phone most of the time. It was a very personal service, and Essentially what was happening there was that I was phoning them, speaking to them and just explaining and just saying, look, this is what I'm actually looking at doing. I've got a lot of friends that own businesses as well. And yeah, I spoke to a lot of people, and essentially our strategies came from, I'm referring to our, because there's another co-founder in the business as well, Oliver. And it was almost a case of, again, with sort of him and how it started, is we sat down and just ran through the full business. And in terms of the scalability option, because for me, it was obviously the pain points for the clients, but it was pain points for myself in the fact that we needed to create something that was scalable and that also wasn't a business revolved around me. And that was, I know loads of business owners face the same sort of problems, and it's absolutely amazing, but we wanted to, and I actually really enjoy that side of it, but we wanted to create something that was completely scalable and also that wasn't revolved around a personal service with myself and the other co-founder, and that didn't eat up into our time. So we wanted to create something that was, one, scalable, and two, we needed to look online. It's essentially the way our business is going to grow massively, and it's going to continue to grow by focusing online. So our strategies around the branding side of it, obviously, hence the name, White Label, it's aimed at agencies and was from the start. And we knew that they were sort of, there wasn't as many clients that were agencies, but they were our ideal. It's who it worked best for. They've got the same sort of pain points that I had. And it was directly aimed at them. So sort of the name and the branding initially came from that. The pre-launch strategies we had, essentially we sort of just sat down and said, how are we going to target these people? How's the best way to approach it? How are we going to keep it scalable? And it's obviously evolved over time, but starting from the very start, what happened was obviously we couldn't hire straight away. So we couldn't go from day one and take somebody on. It was myself that was designing for all of our clients. So we sort of, how we actually prepared to get it off the ground was actually purchasing data for an email list, which seems a little bit odd now thinking back. However, it really got us off the ground. And it was basically just, we targeted agencies in an email campaign. Surprisingly, we decided to go down the route of not designing an email. And essentially it was a personal text-based email, just completely explaining the service. And to be honest, it probably took us at quite a surprise, but that really got us off the ground. It got quite a lot of custom backing. The other strategies for it were the fact that there are other people on the market doing this. And essentially, it was probably over a case of 3 months is we completely reviewed everything that other people offering this monthly service that we're offering was sort of doing, what activity they were doing. We researched into their ads. We researched into their keywords and actually broke down how they were sort of operating, and they do it in a completely different way now to how we do it. And we wanted to keep it, again, very personal with our designers. And there was obviously so many things that came into play to get it off the ground. But I think the main one was having a clear marketing strategy, ensuring the business was completely scalable, ensuring that it wasn't based around myself or the other co-founder, and it was actually a business rather than our faces. And also differentiating, we took quite a bit of time in deciding how we'd be different to anyone else offering this service, because it's such a new model to the market that not a lot of people are doing it this way. So we need to just make sure that we were doing it different, and also we try and create something that's a bit of a no-brainer for our clients, essentially. And almost we went quite, I mean, to be honest, that was probably a lot to do with the co-founder and myself. I'm more of a doer. So I'm more of, yeah, just do it. Let's go. This is what I want to do. But that sort of, that mix had a really good good impact on before we actually started about getting it ready, because essentially we offer these packages for people and there needs to be some tangibility to it all, and it needs to be, there needs to be some sort of benefit for people, and also just sort of it just needs to be, essentially our prices are extremely cost effective on the market. They're extremely, extremely cost effective. And what we need to do is we need to be able to back it up. We didn't want to have a cheap service and low quality and just, oh yeah, just get as much of this done as you can and work with smaller businesses. We wanted to attract big agencies, big companies, produce nice work and hire top designers. That was our goal, because it's obviously evolved over time and helped get us to where we are today. But that was from day one. That was our biggest thing. We didn't want to be cheap and cheerful. We wanted to be cost effective and valuable.
Yeah, no, definitely. So that's interesting, because I think that's a really relevant point in terms of any launch strategy, but also after launching, continuously thinking about how you can develop and evolve and looking at your competitors, that competitor research. I think to some extent, but there's the validation as well, you know, when you're starting out, is are there other people doing it? And I think sometimes people want a unique idea. It's rare to happen. But in a way, actually, by it not being unique, it gives it validation that there's clearly a marketplace for it. So that's a good thing. And when you were looking at your competitors, and you wanted to, I'm guessing you wanted to differentiate your output in terms of the quality because you knew your competitors maybe weren't producing the quality. Would that be a fair statement?
Of course, completely fair. And it's sort of, it's not almost to diss the competitors. They just do it in a, theirs is the same concept, but a different model.
In what way? So can you sort of dive into that? And how do you sort of quantifiably, you know, compare, I guess?
Of course. So essentially our competitors, and they're sort of, is genuinely a handful across the world that are offering what we're offering. It's a really, really small market that are doing a similar thing. And our competition tend to use freelancers in different countries. So their work tends to be produced in sort of like the Philippines, in India, places like that, and they tend to target the American market and target smaller customers. And for us, what really puts us apart from them is the fact that ours is all UK based. We've made sure it was UK based. We wanted control. We wanted to target UK customers, so we needed our designers to understand the UK market. It was based around the quality as well. It's completely sort of different in the fact that people understand it. If they've ever freelanced anything out to India or places like that, they are really good, really technical at what they do. And the in design, the style's completely different. They've grew up around a Filipino market or an Indian market, and they see completely different creative work. And in the UK, and it even differentiates between the US as well. Like the design styles are completely different. And we wanted ours to be completely UK based, UK designers, and us to have control over things as well. We sort of, from day one, obviously we explored if that option would work before we started in the pre-launch
strategy.
There's
obviously benefits, isn't there?
There's benefits. It's a lot cheaper. That's it. And it just, everything we came back to was that, although we want it to be a scalable business, we don't want to, one, lose control. We want to be in complete control over everything that's going on. And two, again, it just comes down to the quality. I think that's probably the short answer to it. Is the fact that we want to back up what we're offering. And we often say it, me and the co-founder, is we jump on calls with clients and sell them the world and join the call with so much energy, and we need to back it up with our designers. And they do, and they really, really do. And that was sort of from day one that we wanted to do that. But yeah, just sort of competitor research just sort of led us down the route of, it's an amazing model in terms of a business model because of the residual income side of it. It's a set cost every month that people tend to pay sort of on direct debit. So it's amazing because, as you know yourself, for sort of cash flow benefits to have that guarantee coming in every month, it's amazing. So it was only really that side that we replicated, essentially. And after reviewing it, we just wanted to be UK based, extremely high quality, and also have the agency feel to it, rather than essentially the other competitors. They use ticketing systems to place orders. So you'll go onto a website, you'll type in what your project is and send it off. With ours, we want UK designers that can speak to their clients. So our clients and designers have phone calls all the time, and just being able to get a sort of project across to someone on the phone and to speak to somebody and not have it filtered down by a project manager or creative director, you're taking it straight from the client's mouth, and they've got somebody there they can talk to. If things slightly off, pick up the phone and have a phone call. And that sort of, we're quite big at the minute of really sort of keeping it separate. And also for us, again, to have the agency buzz going around the company as well. Like all of our team really get on. We do have a great laugh, and we're still really close with all of them. And to have that, it just brings for better work internally and for our clients, to be honest, because I'm pretty sure they're really happy. They seem really happy. So it's just, and just to sort of give that to them. And there's quite a lot of perks for the team as well working here. And we didn't want it to be, you're in a different country. Like you can only communicate via message or email or a system. So it was that personal side that we really wanted to get in as well. That was sort of a main one for us, really.
No, brilliant. So what's the future hold? What's the plans now moving forward?
So probably for us, it's to continue to essentially we've grown really quickly. I mean, sort of we're 18 months in. And there's 14 of us. So we've grown extremely quickly to where we are now. And it's probably continued growth. I know that's the straightforward answer. We're essentially now looking at sort of flipping it to, we still do a lot of personal selling, to be honest. And we're essentially now looking at concentrating online. We're in a position now where we feel we've completely nailed the service side of it, and it runs extremely smoothly, and we've ironed out any potential issues that our service has to offer. So we're in a very good position with that. So now it's continued growth. We don't really want to grow at a quicker rate, just continued. So we're looking online. We sort of run social media ads, which are starting to take off, and it's just diving deeper, I think, into that continued growth and scale. We're quite big on, we both never take the foot off the gas. We're constantly on it all the time, from extremely early in the morning till extremely late at night, and we're just sort of getting to the point where we just both want to improve efficiencies of everything, really, and ensuring that, yes,
so operationally it's working.
Operation,
like
yeah,
smooth oil machine type thing.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it's just getting it completely geared now for continued growth and keeping the structure. Because again, like when we go from 14 staff to 20 staff, again, structures need to change, and we need to. It's sort of keeping on top of that. And again, I think our main one is continued growth. As I say, we feel extremely comfortable with where we are with our clients now. We know what we're offering them is an amazing service. So for us, it's sort of just keeping on going, picking it up, concentrating, and just constantly looking for new ways to be doing things, and constantly looking, just reviewing what we're doing, and just it's just efficiencies. I think for us, that's one massive thing I've learned over the past 18 months is being efficient with things and constantly trying to think two steps ahead is the best way of gearing the company up for sort of continued success, really. And but aside from that, I do feel we are in a comfortable position and have got to that way because of a big team effort. Like our team are amazing. All of our designers have just sort of come in and absolutely smashed it. And it sort of, yeah, comes down to that as well, which has massively helped us. And yeah, just sort of looking forward for growth really, and yeah, moving forward.
And is it just going to still focus on the graphic design side, or are you going to look at other services, or are you just going to sort of laser focused on that area?
Obviously the conversation comes up. So with a lot of our clients, they love the business model and the way it operates, and the fact that they can pay this amount and be working with someone every day. And it's almost like hiring someone part-time. And they love the fact they can do that outsource because it feels like a member of the team and there's no massive implications, there's no contracts involved. So we get a lot of people asking, do you do marketing services, SEO, content writing, like, and things like that? And they're like, I'd love if you had that service. So the conversation has cropped up a lot of times. For us, to be honest, we're going to focus on the design side. There's still a long way for us to go before we reach the limit. We are going to concentrate on it. The conversation will keep cropping up.
Definitely. I think that's a smart move, because I think I can imagine the mechanics of the business model will be so different, you know, with running a photography shoot compared to a design project.
The mechanics of
that process is so different.
Of course, yeah, and it's sort of, to be honest, I fell for the mistake before of trying to do everything, loads of things going on, and it was focus on what you're very, very good at. And because essentially, yes, we could bring somebody in that could do SEO, content writing, things like that for people. But the problem is we haven't got a massive understanding on it. So why are we offering it to our clients? Mm. We can't control that. And yes, it would work really smoothly, but they're completely different. And with design, it's tangible. Well, it's not tangible, but there's output to it. Like you say, with photography, you don't know how long things are going to take. There's travel costs involved. There's a lot involved in it. And with ours, there's almost, and because our team are remote anyway, across the UK, so they're not based in our office, they're all around the UK. It's fine because it sort of runs smoothly. And yeah, as I say, it has cropped up before, but I think you're right, it's focus on what you're good at, and also not get sort of drawn in. I don't want anything to stray away from where we're going with this. I think it's probably the best answer to it. It's just continuing with it, and there's a long way for us to go.
No, fantastic. And I'm intrigued to sort of learn a bit more about the how you sort of manage sort of the low margin cost that you charge to obviously that good output, and
of course,
and that model, because you know, look, probably a lot of freelancers began, how does that work? Or how does that work? I mean, you gave away, that's absolutely fine. But I'm just intrigued to sort of learn a bit more.
Yeah, so I mean, to start with, we were concerned with that side of it, but we're in a position now where we're very honest with like the way we do things, because what we found was that when we started, we sort of danced around the subject and didn't sort of give any tangibility to it. And for us, we have this phone call every day. It's the first thing clients ask, like, how does it work? How do you do it? For us, it's based on our designers having other accounts. And to be honest, so we, in terms of a business structure, there's myself and the other co-founder, the rest of the team are designers. So typical agencies, for example, have agency owner, creative directors, project managers, and then their design team. And what we found was that, and that was sort of the idea with us, we were going to do a similar model. And what we found was that as soon as I stepped away from designing, I sort of fell into that role of creative direction with the team. And what was happening was I was the stopping point in there. I was what was going wrong instead of the actual designers, because it wasn't getting filtered down. So that's one reason we don't have middle tier management in. It's essentially the client and the designer.
There's a huge benefit that without that, isn't there? You can get that direct communication. There's no delay in time.
That's it.
And maybe miscommunication or
that's it.
You know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's also the fact that obviously with that, it makes our hiring process a lot harder. So we have to be assigning people who are going to be able to have these conversations, who are going to be able to take creative lead with people. So people might join a call and say, look, I'm looking at producing a 2-minute explainer video. Where do I start? And obviously that needs somebody to take control. So our designers, typically they've come from agencies, they're freelance, they've got that experience of speaking to people. And it's that middle tier management system that does help us sort of keep the cost down. Mm. We also, obviously there's one, which is the fact that we don't need a big accounts team because of we're not chasing payments on a sort of daily basis. That massively helps. And also the fact that our designers have other clients. So essentially how we do it is, we say it's really, really similar to hiring somebody part-time. So we just do a bit of time every day, and everyone has multiple clients. And it runs as smoothly as that, really. And people say you sort of like it's asking for problems, but it's the way we structure it. We're very streamlined internally with our communication, in the fact that our designers send their clients daily emails in the morning. They'll get an email saying, hi, so-and-so, I'm working on this for you today. They might have a big long list, but they'll pick what the client's prioritized. And if they haven't prioritized anything, they'll ask. So they take a lot of that comms, and yeah, they've got like a handful of other clients that they look after. And we don't fill the team up massively. And what that does, people also find that odd. And what that does is we get a lot of ad hoc projects as well, rather than just this monthly model. Mm. And that obviously helps with margins. It's sort of as simple as that, really. It's just making it's almost sort of just explaining to people that, right, it's not somebody there working full time for you, because they're based in the UK. Like, we're not going to pay someone that amount of money every month.
Yeah, definitely.
And we just make sure it sort of works. And we're still agile enough to take each account as it comes. So if I'm speaking to an agency and they're telling me, right, they're used to paying 10 grand a month with a freelancer on loads of different projects, I'll say, obviously, let me review it. We're probably not going to be able to do it in that cost. But what you can do is you can build up a team of our designers that perhaps specialize in what you're looking for. Because although each designer does have a wide range of capabilities, obviously someone might have more experience in After Effects, someone might have more experience in publications and Adobe InDesign and using styles and things like that.
Digital or whatever.
Digital, yeah. And some agencies actually take multiple accounts from us, and they've built up a little team. We're still saving them a lot of money, but they've built up a little team that does stuff for them every single day. It does go really technical when you break it down, and that's almost been improved over time. When it started off, obviously it was a bit like, right, we'll take on everything, we'll do whatever we need to keep people happy, as you can imagine. Yeah. And when it was just me designing, I was working crazy hours, getting everything done. And I was like, flapping, working so many long hours. And then it's just been improved. And we couldn't do that until we had staff members come in and we get a real find for what they could and couldn't do. We were really lucky with the first two hires that they're both extremely good and honest as well. They'd tell us the flaws that they were finding. Obviously for me, I was like, we can do as much as we want sort of thing, and we'll work and work and work. But for them, they sort of helped sort of sculpt where we are today, really, just with that side of it. That's probably a long explanation.
No, brilliant.
Of it, but it's,
I think it's ultimately about sort of making sure, you know, the rules of the game are clear from the client's perspective.
That's massively.
And the person who's sort of delivering is
massive,
having a very structured approach. Right, this is what you can do and this is what we can do, and having that process in place, I'd imagine is absolutely critical, because you know, you can't, like you said, you can't get somebody using a designer full time all day. It's just
it doesn't work.
Making sure it's
to be honest, we're in the middle of a slight rebrand of a website that sort of we're going to be putting live next couple of days. It's all done, and it's a lot more open and structured, as has almost been a case of sort of keeping it fairly vague because we hadn't quite perfected the service when our latest site was live. But now it's extremely structured, and it's about that conversation with the client. And we offer trials for people. People find it really strange, but we offer 5 days free work. And one, that's great from an ad perspective for us, because we've got something to actually give to people so they can see the service. And two, what it does is almost gives us an idea of clients that we don't want as well. Mm. So we have trials with people.
I guess it's a two-way street, isn't it?
And it's almost, to be honest, taking on a client that's not right for us isn't worth it, because it might stress out our designers. They might be asking too much and not want to pay any more for the service or have any extra time. And it's setting up to fail. And obviously that confidence only comes with when you've got enough coming in to sort of do that. But we've learned it the hard way with taking on clients that essentially they might have overpowered on an initial conversation, and we weren't able to sort of tell them exactly how it was. And then you get a month down the line and they think they've got somebody full time. And although you might find that really odd because of the price point, but people do, for some reason, people do think that it's somebody full time if they haven't been told. And like you say, it's just that structure just from day one, and just having the sort of open conversation, just going. And that's why sort of like I'm used to having this conversation, because I have it every single day with sort of clients, and just explain everything and just be completely honest with people. This is how it works. And it's worked sort of well so far, and it's the best way to do it, really. And it's 100%. Just getting that across in our marketing as well. So
100%. I think that's a really interesting point. I just want to jump on being brave enough to say no to somebody or not wanting a particular type of customer, because I think again, it's, you know, for the listeners out there who maybe, to be honest with you, even established businesses make this mistake. I think sometimes people want to work with everybody, but actually figuring out who your audience is from the get-go and being laser focused with that audience is so much more beneficial, because ultimately otherwise you end up doing a lot of everything for everybody. It doesn't quite work out. You're not, you know, your ideal audience, you know, you might pick up a few, but you can be getting other people, and it's just you're not really focused on who you want to be working with, and it's a bit of a shambolic approach, if I'm honest.
It comes down to scalability.
So many more problems down the road, but you've got to be great, I think, to be able to go, this is the perfect type of person I want to work with. And I've got to be brave enough to say no to everything else. And that's hard to begin with.
It's so difficult, because like you say, like most business owners, I'm a yes man. So like people come to me, can you do this? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it, sort of thing. And
you don't want to turn away an opportunity, do you?
No. But like you say, and I think it's very hard, and most people won't be able to do it in the first starting phase because of the money side of it. They'll need that residual income coming in, and they'll need that security. But I think to do that from the start, it takes some bottle. And it's the long-term side of it. So if we
can pass that short-term gain.
Exactly. So yeah, and it happened in my previous business. I'd say yes, and yes. And then it sort of comes down to a point where you don't end up making money on jobs, especially agency industries. You know yourself, there's loads of projects that happen like that. And I think it's being able to, you have to go through that to spot them. But like you say, laser focused with your ideal customer it'll just ease everything up in the future, and there'll be no hassle. You won't be, because the thing is also like, it's, you think it's difficult to say no to a client on day one. You imagine 6 months down the line of working with them and just go, actually, I've just been doing you a favor for this time. They'll be fuming, because you haven't been brave enough to say day one, right, this isn't right for me. But I think, like you say, for most businesses, my personal experience and opinion is do that from day one, and you're geared up for it, really.
No, definitely. I, I, it is definitely challenging. And I think a lot of businesses don't go through that that phase of really targeting and thinking about who their perfect customer is. And they almost go through that journey organically, and they just take on everybody, and then they realize, oh God, I don't like working with that type of person. And then, exactly. And then they figure out yeah. somebody that they do like working with, and it's a bit of an organic journey. So to some extent, I'm sort of, you know, if I was talking to my son, who maybe would, you know, he's only like, they're 8 and 10, so they're far too young yet to think about starting a business. But partly I'd want them to go through that painful journey of figuring it out themselves. But partly I'd want to be sort of saying,
pre-warn them.
Who is your perfect audience? Let's just focus yeah. on them and just do that. But it's I think there's benefits.
I don't think you know until you've done it. Yeah, I was just about unless to say that.
Yeah, unless you know exactly who your audience is. I think often businesses don't go through that. Again, actually, that's the pre-launch phase of branding. Who's your ideal customer? You know, and getting your brand to sort of fit around that.
It's customer personas, isn't it? And I think it's like sculpting that out. And I remember I went to...
most businesses don't do this.
No, they don't. I went to a marketing conference sort of probably 2 years into Pinkprint, my previous company. And it was all about sort of buyer personas. And the way it was explained was absolutely perfect. And I think it was then probably that it hit home. I was like, hold on, I'm completely shooting in the dark here. I don't even know who I'm going for, sort of thing. And that was again, pre-launch. From day one, we knew exactly who we wanted. We wanted ambitious business owners, marketing managers, and agency owners. And we literally set it out and said that they're the only people that we're going to go yeah. for, because everyone else will be a 1 month client, and we want yeah. long term clients. And it was, it's as simple as that, really. But like you say, I am very grateful for going through that. Because I yeah. don't think I'd be where I am without going it's through journey, that. So, it's so difficult, isn't it? Like you say, it's one or the other.
And actually, for anyone listening, again, it will help them if they can figure out who the perfect audience is, perfect customer, when they go to start marketing themselves. You know, you're not shooting in the dark, wasting your money on different wrong audiences, or figuring out, you know, just wasting your time and energy on something. That's it. Just everything can be aligned to the marketing, to the focus, and just push that. And power that forward. I think it's just so much more helpful. It's not just airy words. I think it just ultimately helps you target the right customer.
It does. Yeah, it does. And it's sort of like you say, knowing that is from pre-launch, before you even start, it is so valuable to sort of getting where you want to be. And it just makes everything easier down the line. And it's actually quite easy when you write it down. I mean, I remember it was in this sort of expo thing that I went to. It was like a workbook, and it was quite well laid out, because it actually got you to work it out. And then at the end of it, you sort of think about it and you're like, of course they're my ideal target yeah, audience. That's yeah, like yeah, yeah. I'm not going for finance directors if I'm selling graphic design services. Yeah, yeah. Like I might be if they were like absolutely huge and they wanted to reduce costs, but like they're not my ideal audience. I'm not going for somebody who's in a completely different industry that doesn't need any design work. I'm going for the right people, and that does help. And like you say, you know, for your marketing, then you know who to target, you know who to contact, you know who to speak to, and it's everything, really.
100%.
But yeah, you don't know unless somebody's sort of either telling you or you've done it yourself.
I know. So when somebody talks about it seems like that's common sense, but amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You just don't do it. Yeah, you just don't. It's sort of like it should be one of the first things that you do when your strategy is laid out, but it always just becomes like the last thing that you do, sort of thing. But yeah. So I think definitely. You're right. Make sure you do it.
No, definitely. Jordan, that's awesome. Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me. It's been really, really great and insightful. No, pleasure. And brilliant to sort of learn about your business. Thank you so much for sharing some real in-depth insights. That's really, really brilliant. I'm sure the audience will love it as well. And obviously, everyone, go and check out, Jordan Pinkham, White Label Studio. I'm sure you're on all the social channels and all the rest of it.
Correct,
And obviously, if there's any agency owners, definitely go and, get in touch with Jordan. I'm sure he'll be delighted to, have his brains picked and see how he might be able to help.
ready to be interrogated now. but it sounds really good. Thank you so much for having me.
No, pleasure. Brilliant. All right, Jordan. Well, you take care, mate, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks so much. Cheers, Ben.